Greetings and welcome to episode 45. This is Dr. Essie McCoy, your number one podcast host of Dr. Essie Speaks Education. I am an award-winning educator, motivational speaker, 6 times Amazon bestselling author, magazine contributor, and coach. In addition, I am the president, CEO, and founder of my own educational consulting company, Dr. Essie Speaks LLC. I assist you in elevating your leadership skills so that you can turn your challenges into opportunities, failures into successes, ensure that responsibilities are fulfilled, and enhance your capacity to lead. Thank you for tuning in last week. Now we go into part two of our discussion with Dr. Rosa Cabrera. And Dr. Rosa, you know that I work with educators and young people are trying to figure it out. And you've given so much wonderful advice. What are some more nuggets that you just want to leave with them? I mean, you talked about being focused, believing in yourself, don't put any limits on yourself. And you have actually lived what you believe and what you have said, what you have spoken has really come to your life experience to existence. So what are some more advice that you can give them?
Sure. I think that it's important for young kids. Like if I'm counseling or coaching, advising a high schooler and they're not sure what path they want to go on, or even if I'm mentoring my own son who I'm often mentoring, one of the things that I try to get them to do is to slow down and reflect. What is it that you really want out of life? What direction is life pushing you in? Because, you know, believe it or not, you come into this world with a purpose, right? It's already in you. Whatever you're designed to do, you were born with it. And so it's our job to spend the rest of our life discovering what that purpose is. And so I tell kids, even my own kid, what is it that you want out of life? What do you want to do? What do you want to become? And how do you want to make an impact? And so once they get those things clear, the journey becomes very clear. And I think it's that simple. I think you have to really write the vision, make it plain, and then go for it. So that's kind of like what I would say. I would say, figure out what it is you really want. And it's okay to get to college and not know, but I think it's important to zero in before you graduate on what it is that you want to do. So that's one of the things that I would say. The other thing I would say is when it gets hard, just keep pushing, just keep pressing forward. Don't ever quit. If you continue to work hard, you'll eventually get there. I would also say eliminate distractions. Anyone who is not in your life that is advancing your vision is probably not supposed to be there. So I'm very intentional about who I allow in my circle. And if they bring negative energy, or if their vision doesn't align with my vision or what I want to do in life or my goals, if they don't inspire me, if they don't challenge me to be better or greater, those are also people that I make sure I distance myself from. And I give the same advice to my son. I'm constantly looking at his circle, and I'm not too judgmental, but I do ask those hard questions. And I do get him to kind of explain to me why that person is a good person to have in his circle. Because I do believe that, you know, just like you said, you got to surround yourself by greatness. And when you're surrounded by great people, they're going to push you into the direction, kind of like a sailboat. You know, a sailboat once it catches the wind, it's able to propel itself in the direction it needs to go. Well, that's kind of the way that people work, right? If you're surrounded by wind chasers and people who know how to blow the wind in certain directions, your sailboat is gonna go in that direction, and it's gonna accelerate in the direction that it's supposed to and get you to your journey. But if you're surrounded by people who don't have any air or wind inside of them, then your sailboat is just sitting there without purpose. So that's what I would say to kids, and even my own kid, is figure out what you want to do, stay focused on it, eliminate distractions, evaluate your circle, and make sure you're surrounded by good people.
Wow, you inspire and motivate me. I tell you, I could just listen to you all day. You just have so much knowledge. You are just filled with depth, and it's amazing to just listen to you. And young people, anyone, I hope that you're listening and you're adhering to this advice, and you think about what it is you really want to do in life. How are you being pushed? Where are you being pushed? Just keep pushing, keep pressing forward, as Dr. Rosa said, and get rid of those distractions. Awesome advice. So tell us a little bit about some challenges that you have faced and how did you overcome them?
I think the biggest challenge that I faced was getting divorced. That was a huge challenge for me. It was hard for me to make the decision to end my own marriage. My ex-husband, he was in the military and he served 2 times in Iraq. And both times when he served, he just didn't return back home the same person that he was when he left. And it was a big challenge navigating his PTSD. And it was a big challenge navigating just all of the trauma that he had experienced. And it just got to the point in our marriage, with all the help and all the prayers, that I had to make a decision for myself and my family, because we could no longer remain in a toxic environment. It just wasn't healthy for me. It wasn't healthy for our son. And so when I finally made that decision, I sat down and I reflected for a really long time. And I asked myself, Rosa, what is it that you want in life? And does this fit into the vision? And once I answered that question, then I took action. And unfortunately, that action was to end my marriage. And at the time, I was really struggling with ending my marriage because I wasn't as educated as I am now. So, you know, if I can talk to, you know, my pre-self, I would say, do it. Trust me, it's going to be better on the other side, right? But I didn't know that when I was going through what I was going through. I just had barely gotten an associate's degree. I was working at the bank as a cashier, as a teller, and I was making like $8 an hour in Fort Hood, Texas. And I was looking at all the bills. You know, we had just purchased a home. You know, my mortgage was about $900 a month. I had a car. I had insurance. I had a small son. And I remember being so terrified of leaving my husband, because I kept saying, how am I going to make it? Like, I kept praying and I kept asking God, like, how am I going to make it? I don't even make enough money to pay half of this mortgage. And I was just so fearful and so scared, but I knew I had to make the decision. So I just kept praying and praying and praying. And eventually God started opening up several doors. I eventually went to work for the Department of Defense, which, you know, it pretty much like quadrupled my income. And then I graduated and I became a teacher. I was able to get my teaching certificate. I became a teacher and that almost doubled my income. And when it was finally time for me to exit that marriage, God had already set it all up for me to be able to exit in a way that that made sure that all of my needs were taken care of. And I remember praying that prayer and praying to God to help me to figure out when the timing was right for me to make certain moves. And, you know, when the timing was right, with all the courage I had inside of me, I decided to exit out of a very difficult, challenging relationship. And once I took the leap, it just got easier and easier and easier. It was almost as if my whole purpose in life was being held up by one person. And it only took me making a few tough decisions to clear the way for all of the success that I've had. And I look back on that decision and the journey that I've made and the very difficult decisions that I made. And I have no regrets making the decisions that I had to make to, you know, put myself first, to put my family first, and to thrive in the way that I have.
So definitely, thank you for sharing your personal experience. And as you said, I know it was difficult, but as you indicated, something good came from that situation. It has and will continue to be used for your good. I know that. I hear it in you. So thank you for sharing. So tell us about one of your greatest successes thus far.
I think one of my greatest successes was when I was in Houston Independent School District. I became a principal of a very low performing school in the district. And it was also one of the lowest performing schools in the state. And I remember before I became a principal, I had just gotten my doctoral degree. And before I became a principal, I remember there were like five other schools that were open, and I had about three senior support officers wanting me to go to their schools. They were, you know, chasing after me saying, I really want you to be the principal at this school. And so I went to all five schools, and I went to the neighborhoods and I talked to people in the neighborhood. And I finally settled on this one school in Fifth Ward in Houston, Texas. And it was in a very low socioeconomic community. There were a lot of issues in that community, but I just fell in love with the school. I fell in love with the people, and I knew that I wanted to go to a school that I could make the most impact. I wanted to go to a school that was under-resourced and that I could give my all to. And so that's part of the reason why I selected that school. And when I got there, there were a lot of challenges. I remember days where I would go home and I would cry because I'd be like, oh my gosh, the school is such a mess. Like, what did I get myself into? And I was really stressed, but then I finally figured it out. And I finally decided in my mind what I was going to do to fix that school, to turn it around, to help the staff to improve and to help the students to get focused on academics. Because when I first got there, there were constant fights, about 8 to 10 fights a day. The fourth and fifth graders were unruly, out of control, and there was just a lot of disciplinary issues. And so I knew going in, that was one of the first things that I needed to work on. I needed to work on getting the kids to get back focused on academics, reducing the amount of conflicts and the amount of fights that broke out in my hallways, and really putting a lot of time and effort into educating my staff. And so I put a lot of money and a lot of resources in bringing in consultants and leaders and coaches to really develop the mastery of my staff. And once my staff developed the mastery that they needed in their own content, the learning really took off and students really started to sit down and pay attention, and they started to take their academic careers a little more seriously. And a lot of the fights stopped happening because they were so engaged in the learning. But I also was very intentional about hiring a lot of Black men around me. My right-hand guy, he was like my assistant principal. He was an African-American gentleman that I had actually worked with as a kindergarten teacher. We were both kindergarten teachers, and he was a phenomenal educator. And I knew when I became a principal, I needed him by my side. And so I was intentional about hiring people like that, who I knew could make an impact, especially with my Black boys, because that school was about 99% African-American students. And so I hired a couple of other African-American male educators and staff. And I really set the vision for them. And I really wanted them to, instead of discipline, I wanted them to coach. Go in there and coach the boys, because they need coaching from really strong, professional, educated Black men. And so they went in there and they did a phenomenal job. My right-hand person, he did an excellent job. He never raised his voice. He never mistreated any of the boys. He always had a very calm, very steady presence and voice. And when he would have issues as far as discipline, he would just help them to really realize their mistakes. Like, he just walked them through the process. And so once we got the discipline and the academics in place, we just started zeroing in on the data, and we started zeroing in on each individual student and what each individual student needed. Okay, where are the gaps? What do they need? What additional coaching do they need? And so then I hired about 5 retired teachers that were either HISD teachers or other teachers. And I got them to come in and coach mainly my boys, but I got them to coach most of my African-American kids in all of the areas that they had gaps in. And by the time, and we did that for a few years, by the third year of really narrowing in on the data, narrowing in on each individual student and closing each individual student's gaps, by the third year, we were the highest performing school in the state for our demographics and in the district. We outperformed even the richest white schools in Houston, Texas. And my African-American boys, there were several of them on the math test, on the standardized math test, they got 100%. And there were about 10 of my boys who got 100% on their math standardized test. But I also had an amazing, brilliant African-American woman who I actually, she's still to this day my mentor. I see her as my mother. That's another person that I forgot to mention made a big impact on my life and the direction that I went into. One of my own teachers, she was an older lady. I used to refer to her as Mother Moore, and I still refer to her as Mother Moore to this day. Brilliant in math. Brilliant math teacher. One of the most brilliant math teachers I've ever seen in my life. And the way that she would teach the math to my boys and my young African-American girls, I was blown away. And it was no wonder that our math scores for the fifth grade were the top performing in the district because of her. I mean, she was just such a brilliant individual. And then, of course, I convinced her to mentor the fourth grade teachers, other fifth grade teachers, and even some third grade math teachers who were struggling. And every year they just got stronger and my whole team got stronger. So yeah, that's one of the best accomplishments that I had, was turning around a school and making a school in the heart of Fifth Ward that was failing miserably to become one of the best schools and to become a shining star, because everyone from around the state wanted to know what we were doing. District leaders wanted to know what we were doing. And our recipe was very simple. It was pretty much, let's zero in on the data. Let's figure out what every kid needs and let's give them what they need.
And I definitely know that journey. And I know that is the reason that I connected to you, because we took those challenging schools and we turned them into successful schools. And just turning around low performing schools, people do not realize how much work it is, but it is a tremendous amount of work, but the reward is so great. You can't even put it in words. And so thank you for sharing that. You are definitely preaching to the choir when you talk about that. And the strategy of hiring minority males, I did some of the same things. The same strategies that you implemented are the same things that I did at the schools that I turned around. So thank you once again. And as you know, Dr. Essie Speaks Educational Consultant is about sharing resources to help others achieve their goals. And so how do you feel, especially attorney, Dr. Rosa, how do you feel that you're going to continue to help people in the future?
I think that I would like to continue to stay in education. I would like to continue to advance into perhaps the high school principal position and eventually the superintendency. But I would also like to continue to use my law degree to advocate when I can. I really have a strong desire to get into civil rights, possibly even to get into, dabble into some criminal law. I think that the system, especially the legal system, is not perfect. And there's a lot of work that needs to be done there. So I see myself just as I have all these years, I see myself in a dual role. The role of, you know, leading a district and, you know, doing really well at that, but then also the role of advocating for people who can't advocate for themselves or people who don't have a voice because their voices are not being heard. I see myself doing a lot of the civil rights work and carrying on the vision of Dr. Martin Luther King and several other phenomenal leaders who have come before me to continue to advance that vision so that we can live in a space where we all feel safe and included. So I see a lot of my work going in that direction.
And Dr. Rosa, I can tell you, you will do all that you aspire to do. So tell us how listeners can get in contact with you.
Let's see. I am on Facebook. So that's one way. Maybe email. You can email me. I have an email. It's drrosa.cabrera@gmail.com. So it's dr and then rosa dot cabrera@gmail.com. That'll probably be the best way because I'm very responsive to email. I'm on Twitter, but if you really want to contact me, that'd probably be the better way is to email me.
Excellent. And Dr. Rosa, thank you so much for being on my show today to share with the listeners. You indeed have an avenue to reach so many young people and just people in general. So continue doing the awesome things. Repeat, continue doing the awesome things that you're doing, and may God continue to bless you with making a grand impact in the field of education. And even if you decide to go into civil rights or criminal law, whatever you do, I know you're going to do it well. So thank you again. And as I always say, education is hard work, but it is also heart work. Thanks for listening. And remember to visit my website at www.drsespeaks.com, where you can find all the links to my podcast, my social media platforms, books, and so much more. Join me each Sunday at 5:30 p.m. for Dr. Essie Speaks Education. Until then, be safe, be blessed, and make a positive difference in the lives of others.